There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Are you jumping on mattresses you see on the sidewalk now?
Oh, hoping, that's all I do.
Yeah, hoping they have bed bugs. And-
oh, yeah, I open it up, and it's love in there. I open up garbage cans and love in there, and then sometimes there's a homeless man in there, and he's just like, I killed love 20 years ago. And I'm like, hell yeah, man, let's go. And I go, I buy him a Whopper, and then we drink a bunch of vermouth at a bus stop together. Los Angeles was great. I really had a great time. It's fun to be single. Woo, mingling. You see the lights of Hollywood, the Hollywood sign, baby.
Yeah.
Them city streets.
Run, go tell.
Yeah, no, the big thing about Hollywood is that, yeah, I'm laying down in the gutter, but I'm staring up looking at the stars. And what I mean is I'm literally standing up, and I see fucking Kris Jenner there. And I am physically laying in the street.
Yeah. Well, it just sounds like a wonderful time.
It's an alternative time. That's what I'll say about my life right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say, yeah, and I'll be like, a quick little sad story is that I somehow left a crack open in a window in my apartment when
I got
home last night. And it was 10 o'clock. It was 10 degrees outside. It was 10 o'clock at night by the time I got back from the airport. And I got in there, and it was so cold in there, I had to sleep with my coat on.
That's not bad. It's like you're camping.
So I grabbed the rest of my bottle of scotch, and I drank it in my coat in my bed. Things are fine.
Mm-hmm.
Things are good.
Nothing homeless about that. You weren't covered in urine, were you?
No, I cape that in my peepee sack.
That's
which
perfect.
Is what I've been calling my bladder to people on the street.
Oh, the peepee sack.
I like being single.
Well, you're doing great with it. Should we start the show?
Yeah.
All right, yes. Everyone, welcome to the show. I'm Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks. We got to get this guy some encouragement over here to my left. What's going on with you?
I need some pep and some vigor. You know what I was really thinking down in the dark, like while I was sitting here in a pit of sort of depression, I started thinking about like, what is it that I really want to hear about?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I want to hear about?
Is it about, would you like to hear about the New York Knickerbockers?
No.
NBA All-Star Weekend?
No.
What could it be?
I don't know. It's just straight up as many
axe murders
as you can handle.
Yeah! Ladies and gentlemen, last podcast on the left is back with some axe murders. Thank God, rock and roll lives. Hail Satan.
Sincerely, no other reason to cover axe murders besides the fact, straight up, it's fucking axe murders.
You can kill people with a knife. You can shoot somebody in the face. You can drown someone in a pool. But you know what you can't do? Unless you're a super badass dude? Axe murder.
Axe murder, number one, takes a lot of physical strength.
Yes. Absolutely. Lumberjacks do it to cut down trees.
Yeah, and then people here do it to kill their wives.
Think about that.
Marcus has an entire book on axe murders.
It's called With an Axe.
And did you read it on the subway in public?
I did not. I kept this one in the basement.
That's great. No. Marcus treats all of his books like alcoholics treat beer on the subway. He has to put them in a brown paper bag so no one looks at him like he's breaking the law.
But I feel like it would have been fine if you were reading with an axe, but also like sharpening an axe or cleaning an axe.
Right.
And then it could be like, well, maybe
maybe he's got one of them old-timey jobs. Yeah.
Because now how many... I've seen like three different smelting companies open it up in Brooklyn since we last talked about smelting last week on the Hollow Moon episode.
The hipsters are really getting into smelting this year.
Yeah, they boil a lot of nickel and zinc down into any sort of lord-shaped pendants or lord-shaped belt buckles.
I've seen
it. Right,
yep,
right.
It's the new fad.
Yep. The book is called With an Axe. It's by H. Paul Jeffers. I would definitely recommend this book.
Don't call him Jeffers, because if you do, he'll kill you with a fucking axe.
With an axe, yeah.
The tagline is, some rage can only be satisfied one way. With an axe!
Oh.
So
yeah! Rebecca, you said your husband's a writer. What does he write about? Is it fantasy? Is it fiction?
All he's been writing all day is this book about killing people with an axe.
Your husband must be rock and fucking roll.
We haven't had sex in a month.
Oh, that's sad.
Yes.
All right,
well,
so let's get into this.
Let's
first.
Jump in.
So yeah, so we're going to be doing a case by case, like just covering stories of axe murder in American history.
Yeah, we're going to start at the very. We're going to start way back. We're going to start in 1836.
Because this is what I'll say. I feel like axe murder was way more prevalent.
Definitely.
Back in time,
it really was. In the book, actually, the majority of the stories are from the 1800s up until the 1950s, 1940s, mm-hmm. something like that.
In the next episode, we have a very special lady who brings it into the 80s.
Oh, my God. My special lady, mm-hmm. Miss Carla Faye Tucker. We'll get to her on the next episode. But this one, we're going to start off with Richard P. Robinson, Dick Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
He was 19 on April 9th, 1836. He spent the day at his job as a clerk at a dry goods emporium right here in New York City.
Ooh,
and he was looking...
Big Apple.
The Big Apple. Looking forward to an evening visiting a beautiful prostitute named Helen Jewett.
Mm.
Now, one thing you got to know about Richard, very good wrestler.
Okay, and how do we know that?
Because the book said.
Okay.
Also, I think he tells a lot of people, if you're a very good wrestler, I mean, it's hard to say on a date. You don't want to say that the second sentence, be like, hey, my name's Daryl, and I'm a very good wrestler.
That's creepy. Check, please. I need to get out of here. He's about to murder me with an axe.
But it's definitely the seventh fact you find out about somebody.
Yeah, definitely. He was a very skilled debater, so he knew how to talk his way out of things.
Because the way he did it, if you didn't agree with him, he just wrestled you.
Yep, classic. That was one of the things in the Lincoln-Douglas debate they don't talk about when they just got naked and wrestled in oil.
Well, it was said that he had a boyishly handsome face.
He was 19, so that makes sense.
Curly golden blonde hair. And he also, quote, cut a dashing figure in a jaunty cape and a long Spanish cloak.
Oh, what's a Spanish cloak? Is that the one that looks like a jailbird?
Yes,
like
that's
back
the
in
one.
The day? Or is it like kind of like the Esquilita, like, you know, the nerds... That sort of nerd outfit. I only seen seven episodes of Univision, and I've never left America.
I think it's one of those jackets that you were only allowed to leave a conversation with a sharp 180 spin.
Yeah.
So it
and
goes
a good day to you, sir.
And goodbye.
From what Google Image Search tells me, it's about true waist high and mostly purple.
Oh, so it's a very... He actually describes most hipsters that we see here in Williamsburg.
That's a Prince jacket.
Very nice.
Yeah, definitely a Prince jacket.
Wow.
Yeah. So he was a big fan of the theater, but his true love was the company of beautiful women, specifically the prostitutes at 41 Thomas Street in downtown Manhattan.
He liked prostitutes.
He loved prostitutes.
Right.
But it was a high-class cat house. It is now the site of Birdbath Green Bakery.
Oh, wow. I wonder if they still got a little ghost of chism shooting through the air.
Yeah.
While they're making their dough. Oh, that's so sweet.
Great.
I can't wait to get really hammered and go down there someday this week and be like, there's ghosts of whores
right.
in here. How's the scones? Everybody liking the scones?
So you got the scones on sale, but we're the prostitutes. I know they're here. That's your secret item. That's your secret menu item is the prostitutes in the back.
I go up to one of the bakers and be like, here, come here and start putting $20 in.
No, I'm just a baker. I am not a prostitute.
Come here.
What are you even referencing?
What's your price? Everybody's got a price. You
are discussing one situation from over 100 years ago.
So Robinson was known at 41 Thomas Street as Frank Rivers, and he and Helen Jewett, the prostitute in question, had been seeing each other for a year at this point. They had met in the lobby of a theater where Robinson had come to the rescue of Helen from the botherings of a drunken ruffian.
So this guy dated a prostitute for a year?
His reward for saving her from the drunken ruffian was a free pass to a fuck at a whorehouse on Duane Street known as the Palais de la Duchesse Barry.
This is why The Price is Right needs to be run and operated by prostitutes. Fuck a yacht. I want a bang
this.
Trip on some bizarre carnival cruise line.
This also probably shows a whole alternative area of the Marvel Universe where no one wants to talk about just how many over the costume hand jobs Spider-Man must have received. Like every time he did something, someone would have, I would have done it, be like, mm-hmm. thank you so much, Spider-Man. Do you need a mm-hmm. release?
Mm-hmm. You want me to activate my other web?
Well, you know, with great power comes great responsibility.
And a huge boner.
Oh,
right?
yeah. Hell yeah.
So after...
Spider-Man seems to be hanging from a... He's hanging from a building through his dick string? I didn't know he could web through his penis. That's semen.
So all he does is save prostitutes now.
Oh, man.
So the relationship bloomed between the young handsome clerk and the prostitute. Robinson reportedly said that he was never happier than he was when he was at the theater.
I know this
Ms.
is back
Helen
in the 1880s.
1830s, dude.
1830s, even more so. Theater was just like, you had like a goat with a hat on and a dude farting into a barrel that they called, oh, it's the Bean Man.
No, you know, they
like,
did. That was the theater. There was actually a whole subset of French theater by guys who farted for money.
That's great.
And they would fart tunes. They would fart. It was like Fart and Gary on Mr. Show, except that was a real thing.
Wow.
Now we got these people warbling songs about being witches and shit.
I think that's so much better than Shrek the Musical. Big old French farts. Perfect.
So of course, Robinson took umbrage with Helen's line of work, but Robinson himself also saw other prostitutes on the side. Mm. And Helen Jewett, incensed that he would dare to go see another woman, traveled over to the Broom Street whorehouse where Robinson was stepping out and brutally beat the whore that Robinson was seeing.
This is the kind of woman you need.
That's what I'm thinking. Kind of a keeper. Yeah. Definitely a keeper.
Well, this wasn't the only blow up that she had. They, of course, reconciled after that.
Oh, so she was like an uncontrollable prostitute?
Are you telling me she was emotionally unstable, an 1830s woman who was a moonlighting as a prostitute?
No, she was a moonlighting. It was definitely her full time
job. It was a full time gig.
Oh, yeah. She had a name tag and an office.
Right. So, of course, Robinson stepped out again with another prostitute, and Jewett made the first threat. She threatened to circulate a story that Robinson had caused the death of a young girl who he wronged and then deserted.
Okay.
And of course, he's trying to smooth this over this morning because he's, you know, he works at a dry goods store, but he's still a fairly well-respected guy in the New York scene.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to smooth it over.
I mean, everyone respected his Yelp reviews of all the prostitutes he fucked.
Yes. Is there a prostitute Yelp out there?
Backpage.com.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they definitely rate him over there.
Isn't that something?
So he tried to smooth it over by promising to marry her, but Jewett heard that Robinson actually planned to marry a woman who wasn't a prostitute.
Wouldn't you believe it? I can't fathom the idea of marrying a woman who isn't a prostitute. Wow.
And she sent him a letter. Of course, it's starting to escalate now. She sent him a letter saying,
I feel amazing and I'd blown you up if I dared, but not with powder.
Is that the prostitute?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I can see why he paid her good
money. I feel amazing.
She was from Chicago, Henry.
And I feel amazingly like blowing you up if I did, but not with powder.
Yeah, it's just like that bears.
Dream
she,
woman.
I feel amazingly like blowing you up if I dared, but not with powder. Doesn't that mean like I feel like giving you a blowjob?
I think it's got to. Or sex, you know, something like that for
but
sure.
But I thought she was mad. Or is it like the Bene Gesserit, like sex witches to the end of Dune? That's like that. That's a deep reference.
That's a deep cut, dude.
I think this woman only has one option to show her anger or show her happiness, and that's through her vagina. So if she's really upset with you, she fucks you, and if she's really happy with you, she fucks you.
Well, the thing is that she can also do a very special move where she can run and jump up to a human's height, get your head lodged up inside of her own vagina,
yes,
and just snap it off.
The
like
old
it's
Russian,
the top of a breadstick.
Yep, the old Russian doll death.
Yeah.
Put it inside of you, and then you end up dead.
Yeah, it's called Medusa's Cave.
I could go there every weekend until I die.
Oh, now, Robinson, he gets this letter. Now he's got something to lose because he's got a prospective marriage on the line. The woman is of higher class than he, so he's looking to climb up the social ladder a bit.
Right.
He responded with a note that said,
"Keep quiet until I come on Saturday night, and then we will see if we cannot be better friends hereafter. Do not tell any person I shall come."
How is he spelling come there? Is there a U in the middle or is it an O and an E?
It wasn't called, ejaculating wasn't coming then.
Oh.
It was called something like booting it out.
I see.
If there was a period there, it's like, do not tell any person, period, I shall come.
Yeah. Yikes.
So he arrived that Saturday at 9 p.m. Jewett took him upstairs where the madam, a Mrs. Townsend, who will play into the story later, saw him briefly before Helen's door was closed. And at midnight, another prostitute named Mary Stevens, who was in the room across the hall, was awoken by a thump immediately followed by a low moan.
And this does not sound very different than most of the sounds that would happen at a whorehouse.
Of course.
Thump and then a low moan.
That
that's the problem with, I mean, honestly, with a lot of murders in the case of murdering prostitutes is that that's the truth, is that the struggle can sometimes sound like really intense sex. I had a roommate. I had never seen gay sex before, mm-hmm. and I had a roommate in college.
In real life.
In real life. And so I was in my room in college, and next door to me, I heard this like, boom, 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 rolling around. It's like, oh,
right.
I thought they were fighting.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, because they were two strong men.
Mm-hmm.
And then I walk in there and I knock on the door. I'm like, hey, what's going on in here? And they were,
wow.
They were making love
you
to
got
each other.
To
but in a way that was, I don't know. I would have killed my girlfriend.
It was beautiful. Well, that's why they know that they're with men, and mm-hmm. men can be a little bit rougher.
They were straight
with each
up
other.
Punching each other.
It's a physical wow. game.
They were
sometimes.
Strong. They yeah. were strong.
Yeah.
I lingered there.
Yeah. I'm happy you got to have the same experience as like a 40-year-old Midwestern housewife when her friend, her son always has his best friend Barry over. Hey, guys, I made you muffins.
Oh.
Okay. And then you slowly exit and pretend like you didn't see it.
Yeah, they were doing the naked squirrel. They gave me a wink and I left the room.
So the thump followed by the low moan was followed by a moment later, the prostitute Marie Stevens heard Jewett's door open and closed, followed by footsteps going down the hall. Opening the door.
Thanks for the sex. I'll see you soon.
Okay.
Opening the door, she saw a tall man in a long cloak with a lamp walking down the stairs. Before she thought nothing of it. Went back to sleep. 2 hours later, though, the madam, Mrs. Townsend, found Helen's lamp downstairs. As she returned it to Helen's room, she noticed that the door was open, and she noticed a burning smell coming from inside, and when she opened the door wider, the backdraft caused the room to erupt into flames.
I feel like of New York City was just on the verge of exploding in the 1830s.
Yes.
Everybody was talking about it, because that's like during the times of like tenement houses, too.
Oh,
where it's
yeah.
like, and the Lower East Side was literally just jam-packed with as many Italians all just laying on top of each other.
And Jews.
Like Jewish people and Italians. And
absolutely. Would, like a giant stinky lasagna.
It was. And was Albert Fish roaming the streets around this time as well?
No, he was early 1900s.
He was early 1900s. Okay. So it was terrible then. So you can imagine what it was like in the 1830s.
Oh, yeah. So once
stinky.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, awful. Stinky.
Awful.
Oh, yeah.
So once the fire was extinguished, they found Helen Jewett dead on the floor. She was clad in her nightgown with one arm raised over her head while the other laid across her chest, and the left side of her body from her waist up was completely charred, and her left temple had been struck 3 times with an axe.
Uh-oh!
Thunk, thunk, thunk! Thunk, thunk, thunk! Are you a tree, bitch?
Oh, my goodness. Well, he definitely chopped her down.
Oh, yeah. He definitely chopped her down. So, eventually, Robinson was tracked down. He wasn't that hard of a guy to find. He had given some information out at the whorehouse. I work at a dry goods store. Mm-hmm. My name is Frank Rivers.
Dry goods. You know, like oats and rope.
Right.
Dry
right.
goods. Yes, hello. Yes, dry goods. Have you seen it? Mm-hmm. Sand.
It's better than working at the wet store.
Oh, you know? That's right. Yeah, I mean, because the boots would rot through.
Boots rot, the bread's all wet, you know. It's never very good.
So he was eventually tracked down, and his roommate, James II, when he shook him to wake him up, Robinson exclaimed, "This is an odd business!" And then the police arrested him.
For what?
For shouting in a closed room.
Oh, I see.
That was a crime back in the day. You could kill a prostitute.
Oh, sure.
But you get the death penalty for shouting in a closed room.
I agree with that.
Never mind for farting on a campfire.
Well, save it for the stage, you know? Don't waste those farts.
So in Robinson's backyard, they found a bloodstained hatchet. And it was surmised that
That's not mine. That is not my bloodstain.
That's not mine. Oh, that's pie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's pie all over that hatchet.
Did you know I work at a dry goods store? Okay.
So it was surmised that Jewett had been killed instantly by the first blow to the head, which came as a surprise since there were no signs of struggle whatsoever, and the fire had been set to conceal the murder, and the other two thwacks were just made to ensure that she was fucking dead.
Sure, sure. What do you say when you're about to swing an axe inside of a lady's temple there? I mean, you could yell the classic golf, like, four?
Yeah.
Or you could, like, I mean...
Hey, you'll never need a hat again.
Oh, look at that. It's really about saving money at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're permanent bangs. You could all say giving a woman permanent bangs is what you mean when you hit her in the face with an axe.
Sure.
That's intense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So James Gordon...
I don't think about it.
No, don't think about it.
Don't think about it.
I don't think about it.
You're not in the right headspace to think about murdering women right now.
No, not at all. You're not even in the right headspace to talk to a woman right now.
That's true.
So, of course, the local New York papers, they jumped on the story, and this guy, James Gordon Bennett, he was allowed to see the body, and he described the body as such.
I could scarcely look at it for a second or two. Shortly, I began to discover the lineaments of the corpse, as one with the beauties of a statue of marble. It was the most remarkable sight I ever beheld. I never have and never expect to see such another. My God, exclaimed I. How like a statue! I can scarcely conceive that to be a corpse. Not a vein to be seen. The body looked as white, as full, as polished as the pure Parisian marble. The perfect figure, the exquisite limbs, the fine face, the full arms, the beautiful bust, all surpassing in every respect the Venus de Medici. For a few moments I was lost in admiration at this extraordinary sight.
Mm-hmm.
A beautiful female corpse that surpassed the finest statue of antiquity.
That was in the newspaper.
I just feel like there's a police sergeant be like, okay, dandy boy, now ramp her up. Why are you talking out loud? Save it for the book. You want to be a writer? You want to be a writer?
He's
ramp
like,
her up.
He's saying that out loud while moving her mouth.
It's like she's saying it, if you think about it like
get
that.
Get out of here, Jimmy.
Okay.
Now, amazingly enough, this type of reporting would give birth to a type of journalism that has become extremely important in today's day and age, investigative journalism.
Oh, wow.
This was the birth
like
of
TMZ? Is it like TMZ?
This was the, because before this, all that the papers would do is that they would just report the murder. Prostitute killed in cat house. End of story. Maybe a couple mm-hmm. of paragraphs. But with this story,
he talked about how awesome her tits look while she was dead.
Yes. The death
that's
of
some
the
investigative journalism
they
right there.
They nicknamed her Wobbly Wendy, and it was really, she became a star post-mortem.
The birth seeds of Walter Cronkite.
That's right.
Yeah, rather than just report on the murder, they dug into the life of the victim, the life of the perpetrator, the lives of all the people surrounding the story.
Because basically you discovered that's how you get repeat customers.
Yeah.
You create a story arc, mm-hmm. and then people want to hear about the story for days. You'll sell newspapers for 5 days. And think about it. 9 prostitutes get killed an hour. That's 9 different stories.
That's 9 different stories. You find the story that matters the most, and you run with that one.
And, of course, Bennett's obsession with the murders definitely turned off his contemporaries a little bit. One critic said he was like a vampire to a newly found graveyard, like the carrion bird to the carcass, like any vile thing to its congenital element.
But I actually, this is really interesting to me, truly, because this argument goes on today. And
yeah.
We're going to have this argument constantly when it comes to news media glorifying the deaths of these innocent people versus honoring them, and their struggle. You know,
but it's been going on since 1836 from the very beginning.
But to be honest, is it not? Actually, it is better to tell the whole story of the person at least. And yes, it's exploitive, but it used to be like, anonymous prostitute hacked to death in an alleyway, and that was it, and that was their whole life. Like, no one knew anything about their life.
Oh, and they went all out with this. They had lithographers releasing sketches, drawings, and paintings that was not only depicted Helen Jewett, but also depicted the murder in progress. The one picture of Helen Jewett's half-naked and partially draped with a burned blanket body was the biggest seller. It was in full color. People could not get enough of it. And the public, they loved the newspaper coverage of it.
Oh, right.
They
yeah.
bought every single paper having anything to do with the Jewett murder. But Bennett, he strongly believed, Bennett, the man of the marbled corpse fame, he strongly believed that Robinson was innocent in the murder and that he was being set up by Rosina Townsend, the madam, and the first person to discover the crime scene. He even wrote and published a poem about Madame Rosina Townsend. We don't have the full poem, but we've got the beginning of it.
Wow.
This is Rosina's part for all mankind. Reopened, rare, and unconfined. Like some free port of trade, merchants unloaded here their freights, and agents from each foreign state here first their entry maid. She was a whore.
That last line doesn't really seem to fit in very well. It's interesting, though. Gore, people think that it's a modern-day phenomenon Rotten.com and stuff. I watched this great documentary about the National Enquirer, and that's where the guy really kind of broke through. All he was showing was corpses. All he showed was mangled flesh that got hit by trains and shit like that. It was more brutal than they'll show today, for
sure.
But
then also, I mean, just think about just Victorian times where they used to take their dead kids up and stick a steel rod up through their back so that they can face forward dead-eyed looking at a camera. It takes 45 minutes to develop a picture on.
Fucking Tom and Becky kept on dying one day before photo day.
Did I tell you this? I was calling in to cancel a flight. I called in the woman, and she was like, "Oh, Henry, that's a beautiful name." I was just like, "Thank you." And she's like, "It's really coming back, the name Henry." And I was like, yeah, sure, it is. Yeah, I've been hearing a lot. Yeah. She's like, "I had a son named Henry. We were going to name him Henry, but he died in my belly."
Well, Henry, maybe you shouldn't call Ghost Airlines any longer, and you should just fly Delta.
And then I was like,
I can be your son.
And then she went, and have you seen that movie with Kevin Costner, Dragonfly? That's the best movie I've ever seen. I'd recommend it to everyone I talk to.
So my flight's canceled then? Is that what? Okay, yes.
I can't help you with canceling your flight. No, I'm sorry, you've wasted the money.
Well, due to Bennett's constant haranguing of her character, Rosina was forced completely out of business, and she sold all of the whorehouse furnishings at auction. And when Jewett's bed was sold, it was immediately slashed to pieces that were carried away, quote, as meekly but joyously as would a pilgrim a portion of the true cross.
I would love to watch the husband when his wife brings home the new couch, and she's like, honey, where did you get... It smells like
a whore, right?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, you bet.
Where'd you get the...
Oh, I got it from a whorehouse.
You got it from the whorehouse. Okay, yeah, I was just wondering. It smells like semen. Yeah. Okay.
I love it.
There's still glitter all over it. Okay.
Like licking the cushions.
Yeah. So it's safe to sit on. Okay.
Everyone's got a passion.
Right.
And sometimes what I like to do is collect prostitutes' things.
I'm actually really into 1836 to 1839 whore furniture. It's really kind of a bizarre fashion. It's a bizarre trend that nobody's currently caught on to.
Well, the first day of the trial took place a month and a half after the murder and drew a crowd of 6,000 people to downtown New York City, all of them wanting to get seats. But Richard, ever the dandy, wore a brown wig to replace the hair that had been closely cropped while he had awaited trial. Bring me a wig. I cannot face my adoring public this way.
Bring me a wig. I want to look as much like a woman as possible. Fetch me a new gallon of powder. My skin has become brown from standing outside for an hour.
You want to look good on your big day, you know?
Well, there was an impressive amount of evidence against Robinson. It was all circumstantial. A grocer testified that Robinson was in his shop smoking cigars and reading the newspaper at the time.
Yeah, I saw Robinson. Yeah. He was sitting over there smoking a cigar. Yeah, reading the newspaper. I remember he was talking about a funny idea about a single guy living with a cat that he'd call him Garfield. That sounds funny.
Wow, interesting. And the old Jim Davis there, huh?
And as far as the axe went, the manufacturer of the axe said that since 1834, in just 2 years, he had sold over 2,500 such instruments in New York City alone.
Wow, good year to be in the axe business.
Great year for the axe business. And then next, the defense attacked the credibility of the witnesses. Whores and madams, of course, about Madam Townsend, the defense said,
"It is her who has sworn against him. It is she who would erect a gallows for that man. It is she who would send him to an early grave. Mm-hmm. There is a foul conspiracy in this matter, and the whole in that house have combined. God only knows who he had offended in that house."
It is a tough uphill battle for the prosecution. It's all circumstantial, and all of your witnesses are prostitutes.
Mm-hmm. That's a problem, and everybody's a born liar and grifter, and everyone around them is literally a grifter.
Yeah. You have to lie.
Yeah, this is downtown New York City in 1836. It is a cesspit of humanity.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
So the jury deliberated for 30 minutes before returning with a verdict of not guilty.
All right.
But Robinson, as he lay dying 14 years later after contracting a fever in Louisville, Kentucky, it was said that he repeated one name over and over, Helen Jewett.
Oh, he's in love with the prostitute.
He's in love with the prostitute.
Oh, it's like Richard Gere. Oh, that's so romantic. He went up on her dresses. If he didn't fucking chop her head nearly in half with an axe.
If you stick around after the credits of Pretty Woman, this is the final scene. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Richard Gere takes an axe
and chops her top of her fucking dome off, and then Samuel L. Jackson walks in as the guy, Nick Fury, and he's just like, I'm getting too old for this shit.
That's right. And then Julia Roberts is like, I'll be back. And then she haunts him in another movie.
Yeah, Ghost Whore. Ghost Whore. Pretty Woman too, yeah.
Oh, I loved Ghost Whore.
Helen Jewett did have somewhat of a similar fate. Her body was dug up by medical students, reduced to a skeleton and hung in a cabinet. A representation of her in wax, along with a figure of Robinson, became the central attraction of a chamber of horrors that traveled... Horrors! Not right, horrors. Right. A chamber of horrors that traveled from city to city on the East Coast. The current whereabouts of her bones are unknown.
And I guess it's just what happens when you read the... And I guess that's just what happens when you meet the wrong end of an axe.
Yeah! Oh, there it is. God, that sounds good.
And also, I bet those medical students used her skeleton because they wanted to see just... apparently, they say a prostitute's knees can actually be up to 200 years older than the rest of her skeleton.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and so they wanted to take a look at it. It's from the blowjobs.
Oh, I
understand?
See.
You understand?
I get it now.
Yeah.
I didn't get it at first.
And the hardwood floors there of the early 1800s.
Sex work, though, should be... lifted above just mere prostitution.
I agree, like, and this poor prostitute did not deserve to die. Apparently, this Robinson character, the only thing we have is the judicial system, and apparently he did not do it. So we have to find... I'm going to find the true killer. I'm going to look for a man who is 150 years old.
You're going to
find him?
He's and you're going to need to put a shirt on first before you leave. It's 10 degrees outside.
Oh, I didn't know.
Next up, we've got the Barnes Mystery. We're traveling over to merry old England. It's March of 1879. The victim, Julia Martha Thomas.
People used to use axes like they were spoons.
Oh, right.
Uh-oh. Gotta get that meat pie somehow.
So Julia Martha Thomas, she was a twice widowed 60-year-old recluse, lived a few miles upstream from London on the River Thames.
I believe it's pronounced Thames.
Thames?
Is it Thames?
Thames. Okay.
We're going to get a lot of shit either way, so what does even matter?
Oh, my God, he pronounced it wrong. Well, fucking excuse me.
It's Glockersberry, not Glocky-Kikey.
Yeah, it's all lies.
It's all. Oh, and I should know, because I'm from Manchester upon Stepford upon Rippington.
Mm-hmm. Can't be following everybody.
We're gonna be very popular in the UK.
Very popular. So she had supplemented her income from time to time with lodgers, but in January of 1879, she decided that she wanted to take on a maid instead. She hired on a woman named Kate Webster.
So this is sort of a before Airbnb situation.
Yeah.
She just brought in people to her home.
And it's sort of like a slave, but it's like it's like you buy a roommate that has to do everything that you say.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure.
And Kate Webster was built like a brick shithouse.
Yes, she was.
She's a strong gal. Huh?
Big woman.
That's
real
good.
Big woman.
That's who you want for a mate.
Yep. Ran completely opposite to Thomas, who was an avid churchgoer. Webster was a bit of a drunk. She was a frequent visitor to a tavern run by a woman known only as Mrs. Hayho.
Cool. Wow.
The tavern was called The Hole in the Wall, and she was known as being, quote, typically Irish and never more so than when she drank.
So toothless, raging.
Rages
full of booze. That's what they mean by typically Irish.
She leaves the house with pants on, but then she comes home and there's no more pants.
Irish women are like beautiful.
They are.
For the most part.
Well, Irish women and Polish women... They age. They just
no,
once
no,
they
no,
start
no,
aging,
no.
they really they hit it hard.
Irish
they hit
women,
aging hard.
It's the Polish women. The Polish women go from they turn into like Yaya from the ages of like 32 to 35. All of a sudden, they're just like bashy, bashy. But at first, they're just
honestly the
icy and mean to you on the train, and they're gorgeous,
gorgeous women.
Yeah. It was also said that her modes were found to be dark and morose, but so seemed many Irish to the English.
Subtle racism towards the Irish.
Very very subtle racism. She was born in 1849 as Catherine Lawler to a poor but respectable Irish family in Killane County, Wexford. Of course, she was a problem child from the beginning, penchant for stealing, always tearfully promised repentance anytime she was caught, only to return to her ways soon afterwards. Mm-hmm. At 16, she got sick of Ireland, stole enough money to book a passage across the Irish Sea, and went to England, arrived in Liverpool, changed her name to Kate Webster, and spent the next 2 years surviving on what she could steal, finally got caught with her hand in a gentleman's pocket, and was given a 4-year sentence.
That's way too much.
Is it, though? What is a pickpocket sentence?
A pickpocket sentence? I don't know. Probation?
4 years seems like an awful lot. I think this woman was very brave for leaving her family at 16 years old, getting on a boat and going over to merry old England all alone. No, she's a badass chick.
She was a sociopath. Well, could not be. Very good at her job.
Well, she got caught with her hand in the, proverbial cookie jar.
That's
but
the problem with a pickpocket is that there's not a big learning curve there.
Yeah.
You gotta be good immediately.
Yes, you do.
Because you're getting caught.
You do.
You know what I mean?
I miss the old art of the pickpocket. You don't see it around as much as you used to, but these people were ninjas.
Yeah, because we don't live in the movie Aladdin. We're not running around stealing apples from grocery carts and going like, I'm a ribald thief. Mm. And I run along a fucking laundry line and I got a monkey on my shoulder named the Pooh that does all, it's my best friend for some reason, and not a vicious thing riddled with bugs and disease.
Every time I remember that we're not living in the movie Aladdin, it just hurts.
Yeah.
It stings a little bit.
Oh, yeah, it stings real hard. So after Kate was released from prison after serving her full term of 4 years, she emerged a, quote, powerfully built woman of 22 and immediately fled to London.
But the thing is, like, did they lift weights and shit?
I think so, yeah. You just got to do sit-ups and push-ups, and she was probably eating a bunch of box and having a great sexual time.
No, it wasn't like women's prison like back in, like,
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it was.
I don't think so.
Oh, totally.
Huh.
Yeah, women's prisons don't change that much, man. Yeah, they just hang out, they have a good time, and I'm sure she was revered as a goddess.
Yeah, I guess it's
might
true.
Be.
Yeah, especially if you got a big, thick chest.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the back is the thing. If you got a long back,
oh yeah,
that gives you power immediately.
She was living like Richard Speck in there. She was loving her life.
So she decided to go straight after she got out of prison, found work as a maid, but when the income proved to be a little less than she wanted, she turned to prostitution. Now, this is an interesting fact that I found in this book. According to a poll made by a prison chaplain in the year before Kate was released, it was found that only 4% of the 6,000 prostitutes interviewed said that they had been, quote, ruined by a man.
Oh, God.
Ruined
God
by a man?
Yes.
Yikes.
And the other 11,000 said that they had chosen to, quote, sail along on their bottoms to escape poverty.
Mm. Well, that makes sense. She's a big, beefy gal. She can deal with some young British gentleman going over there. May I? May I?
Sorry. Sorry there.
Yeah, so that makes sense. And I mean, I she must have been quite a specialty for the brothel. You know, do you want a beautiful skinny woman? Do you want a middle-aged busty broad, or do you just want a beefy beefcake?
Sometimes I think about it. If I was a tiny little British man who wore a tight little top coat and a top hat, it would be kind of fun to get a big burly woman that's way bigger than you.
Yeah.
You fucking slap a saddle on the back of her and you ride her around for a little
absolutely
bit.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's
like
no sex and it's good fun. We're all having fun eating apples. Being a horse owner and horse for the day. That's fun.
I feel like that's the 4% who said they were ruined by a man. Yeah, no, he never penetrated me. We played horse owner and horse. And yes, I was the horse.
But there was plenty of apples, and but he never took his top hat off or his clothes.
It was terrible.
Unfortunately, the risk of pregnancy was constant for prostitutes in the 1870s, and Kate became with child. She didn't quit the prostitution game, but she picked up her old habit of theft and spent another 4 years in and out of jail. Didn't spend the whole 4 years in jail, but after an 18-month stint.
How did she stop being a prostitute while being pregnant?
I think you just go into a subcategory of fetish.
No, she didn't stop being prostitute.
Oh,
you can roll with all that stuff, dudes. Have a baby fetish. The pregnancy fetish thing is super real.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the Thomas super Crown real. Affair?
I never did see it,
I think I saw it once. My mom really likes that movie.
I feel like if I was a pregnant prostitute, I'd get into art thievery. And start learning how to do that thing where you spray the gas and you see the lasers in the jewel case.
Right.
And then you kind of fold yourself through the lasers and then you meet Pierce Brosnan and then he takes you up out of all your bullshit.
That's what you think pregnancy is.
That's the only thing I can imagine it is.
Okay.
No, that pregnancy fetish thing really is right. I knew an Irish Catholic dude who had a horrible fetish for pregnancy.
I don't know. Whatever.
He'd talk about it, and you're like, yeah, when the bellies are like really round and stuff like that, it's like it's just so fucking sexy.
You know what
sexy.
I like so much? What I do is I be doing it, and then I do, I grab the belly while the baby's in there, and I press my face up it and go be like, oh, can you feel it, baby? Can you feel it, baby?
That's pretty much what I think they do. It's disgusting. I don't get the pregnancy thing. I'll never understand it.
Yeah, hey, having trouble. Go to sleep. Let me rock you to sleep. Oh, yeah. I'm not your father. I'll never be your father.
A baby, like, kicks in the womb, and this baby's, like, kicking and screaming. Just like, get me out of here.
Right, let's get to this axe murder.
Please, so, God.
Oh, do you want to get to this axe murder?
I think we do. So good.
Oh, man, so many licks. So after an 18-month stint in prison, Kate and her son moved in with a friend, a woman named Mrs. Kreese, who told Kate that an elderly woman by the name of Julia Thomas was looking for a maid. Kate applied wearing her finest clothing and was hired on the spot. She left the child with Kreese, and Kat moved in with Julia Thomas on in February of 1879. Within weeks, the situation completely deteriorated. Webster thought
why
Thomas,
because she was a broad-shouldered prostitute thief
and a drunk big and a broad-shouldered prostitute Irish drunk thief
fresh out of prison. Let's just say this woman doesn't know how to hire the best people, maybe not the best manager.
Well, you're not gonna do like a background check on her.
This woman is gonna be your maid living in your house. A background check might be something. Just think about doing it.
Hey, background check. Hey, why don't you take a look at my back there and I see that's all the back I got. It's 9 feet of it.
That is You're funny, you're hired.
Shut up!
Okay.
So it's not known how exactly this relationship came to a head. We don't know what the impetus was for the brutal murder that was to come.
She probably spilled the tea or some other gigantic British crime.
All we know is that the two women argued on March 2nd, and Webster was told that her services were no longer needed. Now, Thomas left Webster to pack up her things and went to church, hoping that the burly woman would be gone by the time she returned home.
I don't know how many times I went to church just hoping that burly woman would be gone.
Right. No, they're always right where you left them.
So Thomas comes home, and when she comes home, Webster's waiting in the dark for her, and then rushes towards the old woman and struck her in the head with a hatchet with a glancing blow.
Oh, in the dark.
Oh,
yeah. I could kill you with a hatchet with my eyes closed. I know, because I killed a woman in the dark once.
So Thomas didn't go down immediately?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, she didn't go down immediately. I mean, she was a 60-year-old woman, still didn't go down, and as she struggled with Webster, who was much larger and much heftier than the old widow.
That was her number one mistake. If you're 60, always get someone more frail and sensitive than you.
Absolutely.
Always have to.
Never get into a hand-to-hand combat with a woman a foot taller than you.
With a hatchet. Yeah. And so as they were in their struggle, Thomas lost her balance and tumbled down the stairs, and Webster followed her down and fucking placed the axe directly in her skull.
Yeah.
That's where an axe goes to sleep.
That's an axe's favorite home.
Yeah.
Yep, right in the skull of an old woman.
You put kitchen knives in a butcher, in a block of wood. You put
axes in an old bitch's head.
That's where it sleeps.
So Webster, who had obviously planned ahead, she drug the corpse into the kitchen where a boiling pot of water was waiting. On the table was a meat cleaver, a large assortment of knives, and two empty jars.
And some onions! Very good.
And nearby, resting on a chair, was a black leather bag, and on the floor was a wooden box with several cloths sacks inside, all lined with thick brown paper. Webster removed all Thomas's clothing and folded all her dress neatly on a table nearby. She then hacked off Thomas's head with a cleaver and placed it in the black leather bag. She then cut the body into chunks and threw the pieces into the boiling water. And we don't know how long she spent at this task, but it is known that she took a break to have a few drinks with Mrs. Hey-Ho down at the hole in the wall.
I love it. I think that's how God made the continents.
Yeah.
Chopped up a ribbon and just put it all over the earth.
I also think, you know, when you're a mother, you got to do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And she's a mother first. That's a first job. Axe murder a second.
That's right.
Prostitute third. Grifter fourth. But first job is being a mother.
Most important job.
You
got to
take care of your shit.
Most important job. Yeah, she was a mother at this point to a 4-year-old, I guess.
Somewhere around there, yeah. 4 or 5 years old.
Who also eventually grow to be a prostitute who murders people with an axe.
There we go. It's the family business.
So after Kate got well soused for talking with Miss Hayhoe for about an hour, she went back to the house, returned to the job at hand. She removed the boiling pieces of flesh from the pot and stuffed them into the paper-lined sacks, and the fat that had been boiled away was ladled into the two jars. A fire was built for the bones, and the body parts that were too large for the pot were placed in the box. The job took over a day to complete. As far as the fat went, though, legend has it that the next day, Kate went door to door in the neighborhood trying to sell two jars of, quote, the best fat dripping.
Well, I would love to watch. I would love to hear her pitch.
Oh, yeah, and I will also say, if this was Williamsburg, Brooklyn, that would... That's par for the case. That is a hipster. That is like farm to table. Yep. That is as organic as you can get it.
It's perfect. Hipsters would absolutely. Did you know this actually comes from a 60-year-old woman who was a churchgoer? Yeah, I rub it all over my artisanal breads.
So while that story is in dispute, it is known that she did show up at a pawnbroker's and sold the dead woman's gold bridge work with the false teeth still attached.
And no one asks the question. No one wants to know where the teeth came from.
Oh, a pawnbroker in fucking London in 1879?
Fucking hate that show on History Channel, Pawn Stars. It's all old baseball cards and things from Star Wars.
Yeah, it's never a fake foot or like a sullied gun.
Exactly. It needs to be murder weapons and then body parts of victims that might be worth something.
Yeah, orphans' clothes.
That would be great. Where'd the
orphan
come from?
Piles and piles of orphan clothes. Hmm.
So she got 6 shillings from that deal, spent it all at the hole in the wall that afternoon.
Man, she should just get a job at the hole in the wall working the door.
Seriously. So drunk, she went back to Thomas's house, helped herself to some of Thomas's finest clothing, went to call on a friend named Henry Porter. In her possession was the black leather bag containing Julia Thomas's head. She took the head with her.
Got to.
So Webster told Porter that she was newly widowed and had also inherited a small villa from a wealthy aunt. While she wanted to keep the villa, she told Porter that she needed help in selling all the furniture. She didn't want the old bitch's stuff. So Porter put her in contact with a guy named John Church. And as she got up to leave, Porter suggested that his 16-year-old son, Robert, accompany Kate home as it was late. And when arrived back at Thomas's house, Kate had Robert help her carry a box, the box containing Thomas's remains, to a bridge over the River Thames.
I believe it is.
The notion of helping a woman home is under the theory that they're smaller than the average person or defenseless.
Yeah, I feel like
this is, you could let her walk home alone.
I think Kate would be fine, especially when they didn't include the detail that he sat on her shoulder like a parrot.
And then he kind of whipped her with a horse whip and got her going.
Yeah. You want to play horse owner on horse, huh? That's a game I played many a time. It's because I got these hunches here. Hey,
So she said that she needed to carry the box over to a friend, and he said, of course. Yeah, let's go. So she told him once they got over a bridge.
Hey, there, be a mate, why'd you grab this box of mine, huh? Don't worry about the clinging and clanging side of it inside of the bones, huh? I don't care. I don't care how heavy it is. Hey, why don't you carry it over there? Hey, don't you hop on my back. Give me a kiss. Hey, my name's Kate.
All right.
So she told her to leave her on the bridge while she met her friends. I just need to meet him alone. The boy said that he heard a splash in the river soon afterwards, and when Webster met back up with him, she said, well, that's done.
That's great. Yep. There it was.
Yep. And
there's nothing like a... Well, I gotta tell you, there's nothing that ducks like to eat better than a bunch of boiled whore.
Uh-huh. I've heard that. Well, this is a church-going elderly woman. I don't think the ducks liked her too much.
So the next morning, it was fishermen who found the box and opened it up to reveal the chopped-up body inside.
What I love is this
I
next...
Think I think I got one here. I got one, Charlie. It's just another box of bones.
They thought that it was a prank played by medical students.
I want to see this. I have... never seen. I'm not a doctor, and no, I, but no. We know doctors, and I want to ask them is yeah. if they've ever used. If you're a doctor and you listen to this podcast,
we know a coroner, in yeah. fact, who listens to the podcast.
Have you ever taken a bunch of chopped up hands and feet and like used them in a prank?
If you haven't, please do, and let me over at your house for Halloween.
Threw it in the river for the fishermen to find the next day.
It is an elaborate, very funny joke. If it was yeah. true,
well, medical students way back in the day were known as very ghoulish human beings because yeah. they used to grave rob on the regular.
They had to because that's how they got their boxes. They got their bodies to practice surgery.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. They would basically pull them out of the ground in order to practice stitching.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ghoulish people.
It worked for us though for a while.
Thank God they yeah. did it. Yep, very helpful guys.
When the constable arrived, he surmised that this was no prank. The headless corpse was indeed the victim of a murder.
This guy had no sense of humor whatsoever. Terrible.
At the same time the body was being discovered, Kate Webster was haggling with John Church over the price of the dead woman's furniture. But Church, kind of sensing that something was a little fishy here, he declined the offer. And Kate, sensing that Church was mm-hmm. probably going to go report her, she gathered her son and fled to the train station, destination Enniscorthy, Ireland.
Ooh.
Church did indeed go to the police, and they searched the house. They found, of course, a lot of evidence of body disposal because Kate was a shitty maid.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, you got it.
I will say, Jeffrey Dahmer, for a while, great maid.
Unbelievable
Ted
maid.
Ted Bundy, great maid. You have to be, that's actually really, to be a serial killer, you got to be at least half maid.
You have to clean up a lot. You got to do a great work. You got to do great work cleaning up after the crime scene. That was her number one flaw, wasn't good at her maid job.
Exactly. Mm. And implicated by a letter that they found that she had left in the apartment.
I did it?
No. Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
It was sent to an uncle in Ireland, pretty much telling them, hey, I'm coming to Ireland. So they called up the Royal Irish Constabulary, and they located Kate and arrested her on March 28th, 1879. She was found guilty, and when the verdict was read, she screamed,
I never did it! And she broke her shackles, and it took four policemen to jump on her back, and she's like,
I think that's the King Kong story. Did she climb up the Empire State
another
Building?
Quote, yeah, and there was another weird quote she said, where she was like, you wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Oh.
And she turned green and chopped up old bitches.
Yeah, an Incredible Hulk reference there.
So with the black cloth on his head, the judge sentenced her to hang less than a month later on July 28th, 1879. And after watching Kate Webster go to the gallows, the mayor of Wandsworth, Arthur Griffith, said she was, quote, a defiant, brutal creature who showed no remorse and who broke out into the most appalling language.
Hey, she broke the rope. We need a new rope over here.
You'd need like a bridge cable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, that was a sports fishing line.
Definitely.
That put her up there, man. I guess you just got to be careful who you rent your house to, because if you rent your house to the wrong person, you may end up getting murdered with an axe.
With an axe. Yeah. Always, if you are doing Airbnb right now, specify no axe murderers.
No axe murderers. And also, if you're renting our house out for an Airbnb, take the axes out of there.
Yep. No axes should be around.
So that's our first chapter in the world of axe murder.
Oh, yeah. Two amazing cases. God. Very underreported. Cases, yeah.
I feel so much more virile now.
Good.
I have hair on the tips of my fingers.
Just tell you, just wait till we get to the cases of Frank Fernando Jones and Carla Faye Tucker.
It's also weird. I'm getting hair growing up in the palms of my hands.
That's sad.
Jerking off a lot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Maybe early onset cancer or something. You might have.
Oh, cool. No, I've stopped touching myself.
Good. That's probably for the best.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Let's give a hail yourselves.
Hail Satan. Follow us on Twitter.
Yes, we're active on Twitter now. We finally took the initiative, so it's LP on the left. So it's just at LP on the left, and follow us there. And we're going to be showing you the inside of the research and some funny jokes and stuff like that.
Cool.
Shut up, Henry. Henry, you're lonely. Don't project it on me.
Of course, go join the Facebook page. Go to iTunes and rate and review us. That helps us out a lot. Go to cavecomedyradio.com/lastpodcastontheleft to buy a t-shirt for $25. And you know, if you don't got $25, shit, you can just throw us like $1, $5, whatever. Just helps us keep the show going and helps keep us in fancy clothing.
Yeah, I mean, that's all we're doing, and taking your money. Haha, yeah. Joke on you. I'm sitting here, I'm wearing a tuxedo right now.
Yeah, all we do is wear very fancy denim clothing.
Ben is wearing the shirt with himself on it right now. Yeah. He's wearing his last podcast shirt.
Some would
speak.
Say it's my only shirt. But hey, you know, check out some other shows on CCR, Top Hat, Roundtable, Sex and Other Human Activities, Page 7, all those things, you know, all that stuff.
Hail me, I gotta get my groove back, guys. I'm Stella.
We'll get it back to you.
Your groove is coming back. I can feel it. A couple more episodes about axe murders and your groove is gonna be fully back, Henry.
Yeah.
Just 3 or 4 more episodes about axe murders.
That's it. Magustalations, everybody.
For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to cavecomedyradio.com.